You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 3 July. The U.S. markets are closed today for Independence Day. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters, Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Rekanari from Anchor. I want to touch on actively managed ETFs. They have recently listed two of them, a local and a global one. I want to get understanding more about what's driving adoption, where we think they will be going, where they add value. We're going to be chatting with the World Gold Council. They had their Gold Mid-Year Outlook 2026 report. What are they expecting for the gold price over the rest of the year? And then thoughts from me, OpenAI yesterday proposing to give the US government 5% of the company ahead of their IPO. Spoiler alert, terrible idea. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Amazon's big Eastern Cape spec boom carbon credit deal expected to create around 11,000 jobs by 2030, generate more than $8 billion in economic value for local communities. Business Day, Optasia surges on forecast of up to 60% revenue growth. AI-led fintech rallies most since listing on the JSE in October of last year. Morning markets. The US, well, the S&P was green, but less than a point up, and tech got hit. NASDAQ down 1.6%. Over in the East, everything is green. Sydney, 0.7% higher. Tokyo, 1.1% up. Hong Kong and Tencent, both 1.7% higher. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 4,193. Brent, 72.28. Platinum, 1,667. Palladium, 1,285. The Rand is 16.22. Bitcoin, 61,500. And top 40 opening call, green open, 670 points, or 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Rekanari. You find him, of course, at Anchor. Reko, appreciate the early morning. And here in Johannesburg, very, very cold morning. Actively managed ETFs, relatively new to our market. I'm thinking, did they come in? I think it was 2024, perhaps, that they first arrived. I mean, in essence, we know ETFs as being passive instruments. The key difference here is that these are active. In other words, they're kind of ETFs, but trading on the JSE.
Mm. Thanks so much for having me, Simon. It's great to be on the show. And yeah, it's a very cold, cold morning in Jersey. We listed these two actively managed ETFs at the end of May. I think since we've listed, that was about sort of a month ago, we've seen about 50 million rand worth of inflows into both strategies. The reason why I mentioned that, Simon, is just the fact that, you know, there is definitely an appetite for these type of products, for professionally managed active portfolio management. And that's specifically accessible through an ETF structure. On your question, Simon, about, you know, what is an actively managed ETF, it's simply a portfolio of stocks that's handpicked and professionally managed by an asset manager that trades on an exchange. So what I think is powerful is that, you know, obviously investors can then buy and sell throughout the trading day, just like you would with a share, but at exactly the same time benefiting from active stock selection of the asset manager. So it's really the middle ground side of, you know, traditional unit trusts and passive ETFs, yet provided through something that's going to give you flexibility and expertise. So I think that's why investors like this.
It's that ease of access. And I like your point. I mean, these are active management teams, such as yourself and your colleagues, Kieran Whitten, involved as well. He's a regular on here as well. And I can then get that access. And that is the attraction. And I imagine we're seeing, certainly our local market, we're seeing good growth. I imagine we're seeing good growth globally as well in the space.
Yeah, so I think, Simon, look, globally, investors are increasingly looking for active management and to engage with active portfolio management without sacrificing transparency and cost efficiency. We chatted about it just before we started the show, Si, about, you know, BlackRock and their numbers around this space and the analysis of this space. So the total global AM ETF AUM, that's anticipated to reach about $4.2 trillion $1 by 2013. And that represents about 16% of the total ETF market. It's currently $1.4 trillion and represents 8%. So there's the expectation that there'll be a massive penetration into the wider total ETF market. And then when you bring that here to South Africa, you mentioned it, Sai. We had those regulatory changes in 2022 that, of course, enabled the first AM ETFs to be listed. And that actually only happened in May 2023. But since then, you know, just 3 years, you've now got about a total of about 48 actively managed ETFs in our market in the JSE. And then you've seen that AUM growth outpace any other ETF category. So I think currently the total AUM within our market is about 22 billion, and we anticipate that that's going to reach 145 billion rands by 2030. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that's giant, because I think the entire ETF space is currently only about 300 billion odd, so it's going to grow to easy half the market. When we look to the future, I mean, at the moment, as I said, you and your colleagues, you've got two, right? You've got the local, you've got the offshore. These are your high conviction portfolios. But there's also space here, I imagine, for niche product. We could have an AI one, for example, and all sorts of other areas that can do it rather than just general equity. That's partly the beauty of these products.
Yeah, certainly, Simon. And I think even when we think into the future, so currently, as you said, we've got two listed on the JSE. Mm-hmm. Both are sort of rand denominated, but our anticipation is that we'll soon come to market with, you know, USD denominated ETFs. Wow. And really focused ETFs as far as the thematic plays. But yeah, when we look into the future, Simon, I think it really speaks to the new generation of investor, right? They're looking for lower costs solutions. They're looking for greater transparency, and they are obviously increasingly informed and digitally engaged. So I think AM ETF specifically speaks to that kind of investor.
Yeah, I take your point. And dollar-denominated ETFs on the JSE, that would be truly epic. That would be absolutely wild. That would be great. We'll leave it there. Rekanari Anchor, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm Jamie Taylor Burnett. He's a research lead Americas for the World Gold Council. The Gold Mid-Year Outlook 2026 has just been published. Taylor, appreciate the time. Gold set, a dozen all-time highs this year. Got above $5,500 intraday in late Jan. Since then, under pressure. But the biggest story is, if I zoom out and worry less about perhaps the six-month chart, but if I look at a one-year or two-year, I mean, 3 years ago, gold was sub 2,000. It has doubled in the 3 years.
Yeah, no, and thank you again for having me on. And you know, I think that's a really good point to think about, right? We all get stuck in the short-term noise and all the, you know, the trading dynamics that have happened in the near term. But to your point, right, look at where we were 2-3 years ago. Even if we took the last half of 25 in the first half of this year, gold's still one of the best performing assets. Yep. Right. And so while the correction has been notable and we've been talking about it a lot and you hear it in the media, you know, it was also to a degree somewhat warranted, right? We got to have a little bit of mean reversion. Mm-hmm. We got to settle down. We got to bake in the rest of the news. And essentially that's kind of what it was showing, is everything up until, you know, the precious metal sell off, you know, in late January, early February, to the, you know, Iran conflict. You know, U.S.-Iran conflict in late February going into March, all that started to get priced in, all that run-up. You kind of had an idea that the geopolitical risk was playing out and everything was getting baked in. So yeah, now that we look at it, we look at the current gold price right now is essentially baking in everything that's already happened, right? All the rest of the drawdown has happened. And so yes, it's been a great 2-3 years, and it's been a little bit more choppy last 2-3 months. But overall, I think to your point, what I would say is we got to remember the long term. We got to remember where we came from. And we still believe the long term story is intact for gold.
100%. And your analysis from the World Gold Council saying that if conditions do not change materially, and I appreciate there's a big if there, but let's take that as a given, you're looking at gold trade around $4,100, give or take 5%, but sort of in the $4,100, all things equal.
Yeah. Here at the council, we don't, you know, give a specific price forecast that maybe, you know, that you see like a lot of, you know, the sell side and traditional research houses will put together. But yeah, like we would like to put things, you know, in ranges and bands and kind of give an idea of where we think things could go. And to your point, the macro are the base case kind of to a degree, which we don't really use. We just, you know, would call this more of the macro consensus. Mm-hmm. Everything that's being baked in, to your point, plus or minus 5%. We maybe trade sideways here. And then if things deteriorated more, then, you know, there's a case for the upside and we can dive into that. Or if things go the other way, there's a downside. So the upside, we would say anywhere from 5 to 20%, and the downside anywhere from another 5 to 15%. But ultimately, you know, what's been nice to see, even on the range bound, you know, macro market consensus view, is what's been good to see is you've been seeing a lot of support around that 4,000 level.
Yeah.
And it's also worth noting is a lot of that buying does tend to happen in Asia trading session hours or in Europe, right? And so you're starting to see different parts of the world. And it really highlights, you know, we look at things, you know, being based in the US, everybody wants to talk about what's going on here. But gold's a global asset. Mm-hmm. And you got to look at it through why other regions and why other countries are buying gold and why central banks are doing what they're doing. And so, yeah, it's been really good to see that, you know, if we see selling in the US sessions, we usually typically start to see buying the next day out of Asia and then into Europe.
Yeah, I found that fascinating part of the research report. Pushing it higher, I mean, for gold to sort of go beyond the band that you're talking, I mean, this really is around, you know, watch the economy. And if we see worsening geopolitical conditions, deterioration there, reversal in interest rate expectations, these are the classic drivers for gold.
Exactly, right? And all these sorts of drivers are always going to be more of your near-term impacts and effects, yeah. right? And that's why we started to see this most recent pullback, right? Well, I was saying earlier, you know, we believe the long-term, you know, story remains intact, central bank diversification, broader portfolio diversification, things like that. But yeah, to your point on what could push it higher, you know, at the beginning of the year, the whole story was, okay, the Fed's got to cut, the Fed's got to cut, the Fed's got to cut.
Yeah.
Then we have the oil price shock and we have the conflict and then you have all this, you almost have this perfect storm, which all hit all at once. That's what drove gold back down lower, right? So if we continue to see more geopolitical tensions re-arise, right? It doesn't necessarily mean the US and Iran or the Middle East. It could be a resumption of things going on in Europe or anywhere else, places we're not even thinking of. Any of those sorts of shocks should, again, help push gold higher. If we see a reversal in the interest rate expectations, that should also be another, you know, positive. Right now, you know, at the beginning of the year, we were sitting here looking at the Fed and they said, hey, you know, you have a dual mandate. Let's look at rates. I mean, let's look at inflation and let's look at labor. Labor started to show great, you know, great signs, but then you have an oil price shock and inflation's moving higher. So all of a sudden now rate cuts are off the table, rate hikes are on the table, and obviously higher opportunity costs makes gold less attractive. But again, as things are starting to stem, you know, you start to hear some commentary from the Fed that maybe this is transitory, whether or not you believe in the whole transitory narrative and wording of things, right? But essentially it's, hey, we got to see the data. We got to see how it's going. And let's also see how does this Fed act, right? We've been so accustomed to years with Powell. It'll be really interesting, you know, to see how Warsh handles everything. I also, you know, would always caveat that, well, hey, if one person changing it at the helm, it is a committee, right? So it's important to look at what everybody's saying, what everybody's thinking. So to your point, yeah, it's worsening economic or geopolitical conditions, a reversal in interest rate expectations. And then again, just long-term investor participation. As I was saying, there are signs that people are stepping in to buy these dips. And that's really helpful.
And of course, central bankers who've been big buyers over, I was going to say the last few years, truthfully, about a decade or so that they've been up in there buying. You had the Central Bank Gold Reserve Survey early in the year, and central bankers are saying, yep, this is likely to continue. We saw a bit of selling. We saw some swaps in Q1. But in the longer term trend, central banks are still there and still going to be buyers.
Yeah. And I would really point all of your listeners to our recent central bank survey. It's a masterclass in being able to see what everybody's thinking. And there's a lot of effort that goes into it. But yeah, central banks is a key wild card to, you know, kind of think about. Essentially, prior to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, you know, central banks were adding roughly on average 400 tons a year. Mm-hmm. And since that, we were seeing on average anywhere from 1,100 to 1,000 tons. Now, while we don't necessarily expect, and we can't expect 1,000 tons of central bank buying every single year since, you know, 2022.
Yeah.
As long as we start to, you know, as long as we still see central bank demand, in our analysis, we think an additional 20 to 30 ton increase in reserves above the long-term average, or around, essentially that roughly means 600 tons per year, which translates roughly into another 1% increase in the gold price. This is the way you can kind of think of every 20 to 30 tons. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm a little long-winded, but essentially we're saying, hey, as long as we see 600 tons or more on the central bank side, we think that's supportive for demand.
A last question. Midterm elections in the US coming in November. Is there any sort of precedent or data in terms of potential impact?
Yeah, so there's no real strong signal when it comes to US elections, other than the fact that when you do have a Democrat administration, you know, running, you typically tend to see gold buying pick up in the physical area, right? Bar and coin demand tends to pick up. And that's really because in the US, you know, we tend to see more Republicans being gold buyers than Democrats. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that's not the case everywhere, but you tend to kind of get that. You tend to have Republicans lean more towards being open to buying gold when they start to see a Democrat administration going through. Now, in this current situation, we're looking like it's going to be more of a, depending on how things work, we have a split Congress, but we have a Republican in office. So far, the data hasn't shown any real signs of pickup. Mm-hmm. In fact, so far during Trump's presidency, we've seen, you know, limited bar and coin buying, you know, in recent weeks. But again, you tend to see that here in the US. And that's not the case, obviously, elsewhere. But and again, it will be something to look at. But the one thing I will flag, aside from just do midterms or do elections impact gold, a split Congress, though, also can add volatility, right? And so if things don't get done, and if things aren't, you know, things aren't getting passed, and there's debates, or things start to deteriorate, or they trying to bring in power, or you know, wean in some of the power and direction that the administration's going, that to a degree can be viewed as a potential geopolitical risk for volatility, you know, that we could see. While it's not directly going to, we haven't seen any evidence that it directly impacts physical demand buying, again, unless it's during a Democrat administration or Democrat control, it could, though, still send signals throughout the market and things could change. And so it will be one of those things, well, hey, we'll have to watch and see. But again, it's one of those wild cards where it may be an impact, but it may be a nothing burger. You know, it could go either way.
We'll find out in November. We'll leave it there. That's Taylor Bonetti's research lead, America's World Gold Council. Appreciate the time.
That's our poll today on LinkedIn. So the World Gold Council saying 4,100, give or take 5%. That's give or take $200 for the rest of the year. Where do you think gold's going for the rest of 2026? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Thoughts from me. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman suggested yesterday, and this is something that he has said before. In fact, we can go back and find him making the statement last year. He wants to give the US government 5% of the company, that being OpenAI, ahead of their expected IPO later this year. It's a terrible idea. Firstly, imagine if this was happening here in South Africa or Russia or China or France. We would just call it government interference. Or would we call it what it actually is? Theft. I mean, why just give away 5% of your company? What's the point? So he claims it's so that society can benefit from AI. And he's kind of in that sense sort of acknowledging the pushback around what we're seeing, particularly in the US against AI. So now we get some benefit from it. That's a bit weird. I suppose he's talking about a dividend. Who's really benefit? I mean, is it surely not just US taxpayers who are less than 5% of global population? So to be clear, not society benefiting, US taxpayers benefiting. But what's he really, really doing here? Let's be clear. He's buying protection. He's seen what's happened to Anthropic. The Department of Defense early in the year designated Anthropic a supply chain risk. This is the first time it's ever happened to an American company. And what it means is that no government agency is, or any company working with a government agency, is allowed to work with Anthropic. Now, this has been challenged in court and will almost certainly lose. We also, last month, the US government insisted that Anthropic restrict Fable 5, their latest model, to US citizens only. Anthropic effectively had to shut it down because they don't know which users are or aren't American. That was lifted earlier this week. But you can see the concern. In essence, Sam Altman, OpenAI, is seeing what's happening over at Anthropic and thinking, let's get ourselves some protection by giving Trump 5%. That's not how bullies work. If the US government wants 5% of OpenAI, they can do it the old school, the old way that every other investor would, and simply buy it. That's it for today. We're chatting with Keir Nyoni yesterday, Prime XBT. We were talking market returns for the first half of the year. US was higher. Local equities and gold were red. South Korea more than doubled over the period in dollars. We asked you how your portfolio had done over the first half. Almost half of you said a mixed bag, but you're happy. A third said poorly, it's been a tough year. The rest said great so far. Have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, saving habits for Gen Z and Gen Alpha.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.